Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Relationships, love, and sex, the spices of life, driving us all and commanding the wheel, is the media darling in the complex world of human behavior. Expert therapist, author, and radio host, Dr. Jane Greer. Sit back, buckle up, and enjoy this fast-moving ride with fascinating guests. HealthyLife.net welcomes you to the Doctor On Call Hour with Dr. Jane Greer.
Hi, everybody. Helping yourself to know-how is why you're here with Dr. Greer, and you're listening to the Doctor on Call Hour at HealthyLife.net. Today on Pop Psych, we're going to discuss how to really recognize if you're in the wrong relationship, and most importantly, how to know if you're in the right relationship. Today I'm speaking with my first guest, Kevin Anthony. He is known as the Truth Warrior. Kevin is a former tech guy who turned men's relationship coach and certified tantra counselor. He considers himself a modern-day warrior who brings both his heart and sword of truth to everything that he does. Kevin created the Love Lab, and he also offers online courses, a podcast, a YouTube channel, an email list, and coaching programs, a lot to provide and give people the best of information. I recently had the pleasure of joining Kevin on his podcast, where we discussed dating and denial. And today, Kevin is here to share his wonderful relationship insights with us. Hey, Kevin. Hi.
How are you? Thank you for having me on the show.
I am well. I'm so delighted to have you here to join and share with us a tidbit of your vast knowledge about love and relationships with all our listeners. It's really a pleasure.
It is a pleasure for me also, and I love talking about this stuff, so I'm really excited.
Well, wonderful, because you've given so much advice on love, sexuality, and relationships. So today we're going to cut right to the chase and really give our listeners some great, great advice of yours on all of the above. So people, if you're listening out there, you might want to grab a piece of paper and a pen or get your little iPhone, iPad notes to take so that you can remember all the juicy tidbits you're going to be hearing. All right, so for the last few months, we've been talking about, as you all know if you've been listening, the watch out signs in dating, what to look for, what to start to steer clear of, reading the small print, not letting little things go, seeing the tiny print that's like cigarette smoking can be hazardous to your health, and the tiniest of letters on the back of the cigarette pack. When in a relationship, all of these things, if you ignore them or go into denial around them, could end up in a dead end, frustrating, or going nowhere relationship. So, Kevin, can you give our listeners, I mean, that's what I've talked about. I'd love to hear from you, and so would our listeners, like three or four of the most common signs that the relationship you're in is either detrimental to your health or it's going nowhere.
Okay, so the signs that it's detrimental to your health could be a little bit different than the fact that it's going nowhere. So let's start with it's not really going anywhere first.
Okie dokie.
So, you know, a lot of times people will think about things like, I noticed that he's texting other women, or we fight a lot of the time. And those can certainly be signs, but there are other things that show up before that that people tend to overlook that can be real signs that it's not really going anywhere or it's not going where you want it to go. So one of those would be you're not making the relationship a priority. And you'll see in the beginning when people get together, they will make the relationship a priority. They will go out of their way to schedule dates. They will go out of their way to maybe go to a restaurant they wouldn't normally go to or do something because they're excited about the relationship and the person and they want to do those things. And over time, you might notice that all of a sudden it's not a priority anymore. well, I know we said we would spend time together this weekend, but the boys are getting together, and I'd rather do that. So
right,
that
right.
idea that it should be a priority, it should always be a priority. It doesn't matter if you are dating for a month or if you've been together for 10 years. You should always make it a priority.
Right, right. I love that point, and it's so true. And, you know, what a lot of times people will do is they feel that they're being pushed to the side. They feel that they're unimportant. But they get a lot of great excuses. And I find what goes on with my couples, and I'm curious if you've experienced it as well, is that, for example, one person will feel guilty about voicing their needs and telling the other person, but, hey, I really want to spend Saturday night with you. You know, why do you have to go play cards with your friends? And so they don't want to impinge on their partner's activities of fun and joy and the things that they know they're really invested in. But yet they wind up feeling like they're at the low end of the totem pole. So have you encountered that?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I see that a little bit more with women than with men. The men tend to speak up a little bit more, whereas the women don't want to feel like they're crowding him or infringing on his lifestyle. And so they'll tend to be quiet more often.
It's so interesting, exactly, because they don't, again, they don't want to upset their partner. They don't want to make them feel angry or annoyed, and they're afraid of intimidating. You know, having that person angry with them and potentially risking their saying, you know what, you're making too many demands, I'm done. So they stay silent and just continue to put up with not feeling that they're a priority. Okay, next one. What comes next?
All right, so the next one is you stop doing the little things. There are so many little things that we do in relationships, the little appreciations, the little helpful tasks, the little things that you do just because you love the person and you want to make their life better. And then you'll see that either over time or even in the beginning, let's say you've gotten together in a relationship and they're really just not the right person for you, they don't do the little things. Mm. I think on my show you used an example of wanting to sample somebody else's food when you're going out to dinner but not offering back, right? Like that's a little thing.
Right. That's a read the small print thing.
Yes, but the small print, as you know, in any contract is the important part.
You said it. That's the maker, the deal maker or the deal breaker. You know, that's why I said smoking can be hazardous to your health. It's in very tiny letters. And on your car, objects in the distance are closer than they appear. All things that warn you, like hazard, danger, are so tiny that people do tend to ignore them. And the truth of what you're saying is so on target and on point, because the little things are the things that what I call lead to the paper cuts. It's like a little paper cut, which in and of itself is not a big deal, but it is annoying and it does hurt. And if you get a lot of paper cuts, you're in a lot of pain and a lot of discomfort. And I think the little things that you're talking about exactly are the things that start to get under people's skin and annoy them, and then they start to get resentful and hold a grudge. What are some of the things you encourage people, the little things, to do?
One of my favorite things really is to give appreciations all the time, every day.
Yes.
Little things.
Yes.
Notice the little things. Like, oh, I really appreciate that you did this for me. I appreciated that you took out the trash and I didn't have to ask you to do it. I appreciated that while you were out at the store, you thought of me and you picked up this little thing because you remembered that I mentioned it a week ago that I wanted it. Just those little things over time like that.
That is so important and so true and, you know, really reverberates for everybody. Because what does happen, and you know, you've seen a million couples, people fall into their habits and behaviors. One person makes the coffee, the other person takes out the garbage. And so it becomes routine and it becomes expected. But people do start to feel burdened by their responsibilities. And it's so heartening to know that these day-to-day chores that you do out of love and out of caring and responsibility are acknowledged and are appreciated. And along with expressing the appreciation is the simple thank you. Thank you. Just a little thank you goes so far. I've heard people, and I wonder if you've had as well, they don't get a thank you and they hold on to a grudge. They'll stop talking to their partner. The other person doesn't know what they're upset about, but they might have done something thoughtful or considerate, or they're feeling taken advantage of, just because there is no thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as you correctly stated, these little things build up over time, and it can absolutely lead to resentment. And if that's not voiced, then that can really, really be a problem. It's like an infection that starts growing and gets worse and worse over time. So, yeah, it's something that you really have to watch out for. And, you know, from a man's point of view, you know, as a man, we want to serve our women. We want to do things to help them.
Mm-hmm.
But if we do it consistently and we don't feel like it's appreciated, eventually we will stop doing it.
Right. Right. It becomes, what's the point? Well, you know, we're going to go forward in just a moment talking about when resentment builds to a sort of toxic level that it turns into resentment and how that can impact intimacy and sexuality. But I wanted to just dial back for a moment because I did get a letter from one of my listeners who wrote in, and it's right in line with what we're talking about in my mailbag, and she said, you know, because it was really an eye-opener. She said, my husband of almost 30 years in August cannot plan or really do anything without me starting and most of the time finishing it. Buying our home, vacation, date night, repairs, anything. If I don't plan a celebration for us, it will not happen. He's a great person and the absolute best father. Do I have the right to be upset because he can't give me this? We're high school sweethearts. We've never had an issue with cheating, but I do feel like he's just not emotionally there for me. Now, this is the part that's so compelling. He claims he tries, but gets stuck when it's time to plan or do anything for us. So before I share my thoughts on this, I would love to hear from you as a guy, like what you just said. Do you think this is that the husband doesn't care, that he's not involved, he doesn't know what to do, he did it at the beginning and got, you know, just worn out from it? What's your take?
That is an interesting situation. The first question I would ask is, what is he afraid of? Because he may be afraid of the reaction from her when he does do something. Like I said, in general.
Like a reaction like what?
Well, maybe he proposes an idea and she doesn't like it and she criticizes him for it. Or
okay,
maybe...
So rejection. Yeah. He'd be afraid of being rejected and feeling foolish. Perfect.
Rejected, feeling foolish, being criticized, being told he's not doing it the right way. Those would be a few things that I would want to look at first. Now, of course, you know, there are individuals who simply don't take charge, and, you know, that's something they need to work on. And that's a possibility in this case because I don't know enough about him to say. But in general, when we see a man not stepping up and not really taking charge and doing things, it's often because he's afraid of some sort of criticism or fear that he's not doing a good enough job or that she's somehow going to tell him he did it all wrong.
Right. You know, that you are so astute and on point with that. That is so, so true. I have heard from so many of my couples where the woman will complain, the wife will complain, you don't help with the dishes. And then, of course, the guy does the dishes. And then she's redoing them or putting them away differently. And he says, what's the point? I just feel so criticized. You know, I can't do it right. I can't please her. So one of the questions for this couple would be, you know, has she been critical in other instances where, as you're suggesting, he might just be afraid that no matter what plans he comes up with or the way he goes about doing it is not going to be the right way. So he's avoiding it completely. But I do have to say that date nights, and just as you said earlier, planning them no matter how long you're married, 30 years, 40 years, is so essential, because you learn new things about your partner and you have the time to bond and look forward to something that you're going to be doing together. But what I've encountered, now I have this with a couple that I'm working with, and I wonder if you have as well. Sometimes the guys just don't know what to do. And women as well, but I can't tell you how many times I have been asked, what should we do? You know, I say, go out and have a nice date night. And they go, what else can we do besides go out for dinner? And so I've tried to come up with creative ideas. You know, well, why don't you take a dance class together? Or why don't you take a cooking class together? Or why don't you take a hiking? All these different things. But I'm always feeling sort of like out of lack, and what do I do? And so recently I found a resource called Trailblazing Love, which is this kind of genius idea for couples who do want to rekindle their sparks. And it's basically, it's a complete date night in a box, and you get to choose your select the box that you want, what you want to do by yourself. So either you or your partner can go on and pick out an opportunity for a date, either to surprise the person or to include them and say, what do you think? And I'm going to circle back and ask you the question. In any event, I think it's a brilliant idea. I have more information for people if you're interested about the Trailblazing link at my website, drjanegreer.com. But let me ask you something, Kevin, because I just had this with another couple. One person was planning a date night and did not ask their partner. They wanted to surprise them, didn't ask them if they wanted to do it. Going to your point of criticism, they didn't want their partner to say, no, I don't want to do it. They didn't want to be rejected by it. And yet, the partner then wound up feeling left out, not included, and not important. Any suggestions for how, in addition to coming up, going to Trailblazing Love, get an idea, but then is it better to do it on your own, or is it better to include your partner?
Well, in general, it's always better to include your partner. Now, I understand that some people might want to do a surprise, and a surprise is fine. However, you need to know your partner really well. So sometimes what I see is, you know, people haven't been together all that long. They haven't gotten to that level of depth where they really know their partner really well, and then they want to surprise them, and they come up with something crazy, and then they're surprised when the partner's reaction is like, oh, yeah, no, that's just not for me, right?
Right,
so
right.
So if you're going to do the surprise, make sure that you know your partner really well. And one thing I would say also to your point is that as men, we love to know what to do. In other words, we're not mind readers. We know we're not mind readers. And we are perfectly okay if our women tell us, here's what we like, here's what we want, here's what we would like you to do. So if a woman is in a relationship and she's realizing that he's not coming up with ideas, but she's got all these ideas in her head, which she most likely does, communicate those to him. Tell him what you want. When my wife and I first got together, she literally made a document on Google Docs of all the date ideas that she thought would be really cool and shared it with me. And she's just like, here's all the things I like.
But now, look, I think that happens to be sensational, wonderful advice, and it helps women to hear that and feel more courageous to voice their needs and express their desires. However, with that being said, here's the flip side, and let me ask you if you've had this experience as well. Sometimes when you tell people what your needs are, and I see this especially when it comes to sexual interactions, when you say, I like this or I don't like that, people feel controlled. I can't tell you how many times somebody has said, you know, I told my partner I like this, or I told my partner I like that. I mean, it's very basic. Do this and I'll be happy and you'll please me. And the partner hears it as, you're telling me what to do. I feel controlled. And then they don't do it. And then the other person gets bewildered and betwixt because, wait a minute, you want to know what I want. I just told you, and now you're not doing it. So in your experience, have you ever felt controlled when your wife was saying, here's what I like, that she was, quote, telling you what to do and that you didn't have a choice to do it? And have you found that some of the men that you work with do feel controlled by it?
Okay. Okay, so personally for me, I have never felt controlled by it. I have been like, thank you for giving me the playbook. I don't have to guess the other team's plays now. I know what they're going to be.
You're the right guy, I'm telling you, for a lot of women out there. Go ahead.
But I do see how some men do feel controlled. And for those men, what I would tell you is, it's not all about you, right? In other words, listen to what she's telling you. She's not telling you you're doing it wrong, because that's what they hear on the other end.
Yes,
they hear,
yes,
I'm
you're
not
right.
doing it correctly. That's, she's really telling you, here's what I need.
Kevin, we are out of time, and I can hardly believe it. And we didn't even get to the things, the most common signs for when you're in a relationship that is exactly right. So you know what that means, don't you? That means, mister, you're coming back. We're going to reschedule and have you back to talk some more and share some more of your wonderful, instinctive, intuitive insights on men and women and how to get along and have harmony and enhance your relationship. And I am so appreciative that you've been here today. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your wisdom.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, and I would be delighted to come back again.
Terrific. And everybody, Kevin, go to www.kevinandcelene.com for more invaluable resources information. Be sure to listen to the Love Lab podcast on YouTube and stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute for more of Pop Psych at HealthyLife.net. I'm Dr. Jane Weir.
How could you do this to me? What about me? If your selfishness is ruining your relationship, or if you're trying to learn to trust after betrayal, then How Could You Do This to Me and What About Me are the titles of two separate books by Dr. Jane Greer that you should get to help improve your relationships. Imagine having a happy, loving, thriving relationship again. Get the help you need with How Could You Do This to Me or What About Me by Dr. Jane Greer at Amazon.com. Get your copy now at Amazon.com.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the best sellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
Dr. Jane Greer is recognized as a leading national expert in sex, love, and relationships. She's the type of person that you want to know. Filled with wisdom, kindness, and empathy, she spends her life helping people. Whether through TV appearances, on a radio show, through her books or magazine features and columns, or in person, Dr. Jane Greer's main goal is to help you. Find out more about Dr. Jane Greer by visiting her website at drjanegreer.com. That's drjanegreer.com. Hollywood. You don't have to be there to discover the inside scoop on the relationships and inside workings of the stars in showbiz or other famous people in the news. Imagine getting up close and personal as Dr. Jane Greer delves into how these celebrities are navigating their relationships with insider tips and insights that actually can help you handle your relationships better. Just go to drjanegreer.com and click on Latest News, and you'll get, well, the latest news at drjanegreer.com. The positive side of podcasts. Always have been, always will be. Uncensored, entertaining, timeless talk. HRNpodcast.com. Take a break from the dark side.
Welcome back to Pop Psych at HealthyLife.net. I'm Dr. Jane Greer. We're talking all about denial in our relationships. My new book, Am I Lying to Myself? How to Overcome Denial and See the Truth After Years of Both Codependency, Including Abuse, Then a New Relationship Weaved with Infidelity, Heidi has finally said she's become aware of her coping mechanisms, false beliefs, which is denial, and self-defeating habits to untangle her mess and finally see and live her truth. So my next guest is Heidi. It is such a pleasure to have you here and join us today to share your story. Welcome to Pop Psych.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, it's so appreciated. And let's just jump right in. You were married for many years in a relationship that was toxic and abusive. So, yeah, first you know, we hear those words thrown around a lot, toxic, abusive. What was happening that made you feel this is really toxic to my emotional health? And what were the behaviors that you said, you know, this is abusive?
Mm-hmm. You know, here's the thing. When I was in it, I did not know that it was toxic and unhealthy. I knew I was afraid a lot. I knew I was anxious a lot. But I didn't know that it was an unhealthy relationship. What actually happened was, you know, it was just a really bad relationship. There wasn't, like, love and affection. And I got pregnant really early on, and then we just sort of jumped into it, you know, got married when my son was 6 months old. And he was a functional alcoholic, so I didn't even perceive that as a problem because he just drank every day. And then on the weekends, he drank the whole weekend.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, people would ask me, like, was there alcohol involved? When I would tell them about an argument that we had, and I said, of course. Like, it was never not there. So I just didn't really even notice it ever. So that was one thing I didn't see at all. And it was that just so... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
It got so bad that, you know, I had given him an ultimatum, you know, that he needed to, and it was mostly just like emotional abuse, but not the kind you think of, like not just calling me names, but like just withholding a lot and scary, like threatening things, you know, like, so it was very confusing. While you're in it, you can't really see what's going on. So who showed it to me was actually a lawyer. The ultimatum failed. Things were still really bad, and I went to the lawyer to talk, because the ultimatum was either you get help, you start seeing someone, or we're going to separate, and I'll give you a week to make up your mind. So in that week, I went to the lawyer, and I said, so here's how it is in my marriage. There's these outbursts that happen that are so explosive and scary. He never hit any of us. I have two sons with him. But he would, like, you know, hit the wall, or one time he broke the top of the stove. He pushed his hand through the stove, throw things. And so it was that kind of stuff. So something like that would happen. Everybody would be scared and crying and freaked out. I would patch it all back together and take care of the kids and comfort them, and then slowly would start to trust again, like, okay, that's done, you know, and have hope again, and then it would happen again. And so
let me just jump in with a question.
Yeah.
After these explosive episodes, did your husband apologize? Was he aware of them? Did he say, I'm so sorry, I'm not going to do it again? In other words, you said, I clean up the mess and I would, you know, get back and start to have hope again. How did you do that? Was there an olive leaf offered? An olive branch?
Yeah, we would talk about it later. You know, sometimes it took him a couple days to come around. But we would talk about it. We would talk about what went wrong, how we could make things better. You know, he would admit that he made a mistake, for sure. But that's why I had hope.
That worked. Yeah, that was what would keep you in place. In other words, he'd take responsibility and say, I made a mistake. The alcohol was never targeted or addressed as the core issue. No, it was just the behavior that came out of the alcohol flow. And when he would say, I'm going to change, it was that he was going to change the explosive, abusive behavior rather than I'm going to stop drinking.
Oh, no. He was never going to stop drinking.
That was
never
non-negotiable
on the table.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a question. Was there alcohol in your family before that? Was anybody in your family?
No, not at all. And that's why I was so confused, because my parents aren't drinkers. You know?
You didn't know you wouldn't recognize it.
No.
If you don't know it, you wouldn't even see alcohol as being the problem.
Not at all. So I go to the lawyer, I tell her, here's the situation, and she looks me dead in the eye and she says, you're in an abusive relationship. And I said, no, I'm not.
Oh,
he doesn't hit me. He doesn't throw me down the stairs. I don't have a black eye. This is not. She said this, and she showed me, it was the cycle of abuse. She pulled out this worksheet that outlined my relationship. It was like episode, you know, recovery, you know, trust again, and then episode, and then, and it went around and around, and I was like, oh my God.
Wow.
And that was
that
when,
was an eye opener, right.
Yeah. That was when the light came on. And then, even after that happened, the real swallowing of that horrible pill, it was just too overwhelming. I had two, the kids were like 11 and 12 at the time when I went to the lawyer, and I could not even start to think about what would be involved with leaving this man. I mean, he told me, he said, if you want to separate, you're going to have to leave with the kids. I am going to stop paying the mortgage. I'm going to put us into, not bankruptcy, when you default on your loan. I'm going to ruin your credit. But that's your choice if you want.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And
so,
I didn't really have grounds to leave because in Virginia where I live, the laws are they either have to threaten your life or physically leave a mark on you. I actually did a TED talk called Invisible Mark about this thing because you're not allowed to just leave your marriage because they're mean to you and they scare you. That's not enough grounds. You can get charged with abandonment and not get your house if you leave because of that. So
that's incredible. Well, I just want to frame for a moment for all the listeners out there, Heidi, what you are sharing is so invaluable because abuse is living in fear, living in terror, living in panic, feeling that you're walking on eggshells. And throughout this, here's the other question I have. Was your husband blaming you for a lot of, like, I exploded because
all the time.
Yeah, all the time.
I went shopping for a pillow one day. I remember this so clearly. I went shopping for a pillow, and I got home later than I said I was going to be, and he went off on me and screaming and yelling, and that's a huge trigger for me. I also didn't grow up with that. So that would just scare me and make me cry. And then I'm like, you know, what in the world? I can't even go shopping. Like, and he's like, it's your fault. It's your fault that I'm angry because you didn't come home when you said you were.
Okay, so let's hold on to that. We're going to hit the hold button for a moment while we take a commercial break here. And we're going to come back and pick up with that because he was blaming you. And the key question is, did you buy into it? One of the things I talk about in my book is believing what you're told and believing that, you know, yes, it is my fault, and then trying harder
100%
to control it. Okay, hold on to that. Yep. Listeners, we'll be back in just a minute for more of Pop Psych and Healthy Like That. Now, stay with us.
Dr. Jean Greer is recognized as a leading national expert in sex, love, and relationships. She's the type of person that you want to know. Filled with wisdom, kindness, and empathy, she spends her life helping people. Whether through TV appearances, on a radio show, through her books or magazine features and columns, or in person. Dr. Jane Greer's main goal is to help you. Find out more about Dr. Jane Greer by visiting her website at drjanegreer.com. That's drjanegreer.com. Hollywood. You don't have to be there to discover the inside scoop on the relationships and inside workings of the stars in showbiz or other famous people in the news. Imagine getting up close and personal as Dr. Jane Greer delves into how these celebrities are navigating their relationships with insider tips and insights that actually can help you handle your relationships better. Just go to drjanegreer.com and click on Latest News, and you'll get, well, the latest news at drjanegreer.com.
If you want USA and worldwide car rentals, choose rentacar.com. Free cancellations on most bookings, no hidden charges. They are trusted by over 4 million customers. Visit our advertiser page and click on the Rent-A-Car banner.
If there was a hotline to heaven, who would you call? In Dr. Jane Greer's book, The Afterlife Connection, you can learn to connect with a loved one who has passed so you can say hello instead of goodbye. You'll get 7 tips for opening the channels of communication with your departed loved ones and recognize the signs your loved one sends your way. Learn how to include your departed loved one in your daily life, and you can even heal damaged relationships even after your loved one is gone. A special book by a therapist who cares, The Afterlife Connection by Dr. Jane Greer, gives you the tools for filling the gaps and creating a sense of closure. Get this amazing book today at Amazon.com or visit drjanegreer.com, www.drjanegreer.com. Remember, media with integrity, www.healthylife.net.
Welcome back to Pop Psych. I'm Dr. Jane Greer, continuing a conversation with my guest Heidi, who is sharing her extraordinary story of dealing with a toxic, abusive relationship and finding the courage to, and the strength to, and the resilience to survive and carry on and live her life. So we went to break. You were sharing with us. I was asking you, were you blamed a lot for the outburst? And you were saying, yes, you did. So how did you, and a lot of times when people are blamed and they feel that it's their fault, they strive harder, thinking if I do better, if I do more, that you can somehow control the situation because the outbursts and the temper tantrums and the insults and the abuse will dissipate. But it doesn't. So how did you finally break free of all the self-blame and see the truth, break through your denial, see the truth, and muster the courage? Because your husband was threatening you with devastating loss. You'll lose the house, you'll lose the mortgage, you'll lose the kids. How did you get through that?
So it gradually is the answer to that question. It was, and it's still, like, literally to this day, my default reaction when something goes wrong around me is I do assume it's my fault at first. Now I've learned how to talk myself through that and how to see things objectively and how to, it's been a lot of work on boundaries and building my own self-worth. So those, but back to your question, it's just not an automatic thing. It's a very slow thing, and even still, it's a thing. So to answer that question.
Right.
But at the time, you know, I knew I needed grounds to leave. I had talked to the lawyer, and I was literally plotting. Like, I had gotten to a point where in my mind, it was over. It was done. I mean, one thing I had in my favor were parents that were really there for me. So I had had a conversation with my dad, and I said, I don't know when, but sometime in the near future, I'm going to need to come stay with you. Me and the boys are going to come and need to stay with you for a little while. And so he knew that, and that was set up. And I had done other things that were smart, too. Like, I got a P.O. box. I had moved the important documents out of the house and put them somewhere safe. You know, there were things people had told me. I set up another bank account. You know, there were, like, practical steps to the whole thing. But I didn't know how I was going to actually be able to leave without being charged with abandonment. So there was this incident that happened, a small altercation between my oldest son and my husband. And that was enough. I called the lawyer after that thing happened. And she said, yes, that's grounds. You can go. So that was my exit out.
What was the incident?
It was really small, but basically he'd gotten into an argument with my son, and my son had his phone clutched to his chest, and my husband tried to wrangle it out of his hand, so got physical in that way. And then my son told his therapist about that incident, and the therapist called social services about it.
Wow.
So that was grounds. There had been some kind of report made about it. I used to find myself praying that he would hit me so I had grounds to leave him, you know?
Unbelievable.
I know. So that's the thing that got me out the door, and I moved in with my dad, and I'm telling you, it's not a courageous thing. I mean, people say, oh, you're so strong, you know, you had all this courage. No. It was literally like, I'm going to walk off of a cliff and pray that I won't die. You know, that's basically.
Yeah, but what you just described is a leap of faith.
I mean,
you took a leap of faith that you could exit an absolutely disastrous experience and situation and fly, you know, fly on your own engine.
Yeah.
And stay
I will
in the
say,
air, not crash and burn.
What people, yes, what people don't realize is that it actually gets worse after. And I've learned a lot about domestic violence, and after they leave the house is the
right.
most risky time.
Yes.
And in my situation, it was just, like, he blocked me from driving up the driveway to my dad's house one time. He tried to blackmail me. He was having me followed. There were so many things that were way worse.
So he was still trying to control you through scaring you and intimidating you.
Oh, yeah.
And frightening you. He was trying to continue the marriage even though it was over and you were out.
He was trying to get
keep
me back.
You living in the same climate and environment, hoping
yep.
that you would regress and return. That was
oh,
his
yes.
plan.
Mm-hmm. And I still had to share children with him. So I couldn't just cut it off, you know. I had, on one side I had social services in one ear saying, well, you can't expose your children to abuse. And then I had the lawyers in the other ear saying, you can't keep your kids from him under the law.
But now let me
like,
ask a question. Hold on. Was there infidelity? Because infidelity should be...
Not with him. No. Yeah.
Okay. So that was with somebody else.
Yeah, that was a subsequent relationship, and that's a whole other story for another podcast, which is so fantastic. That's the craziest, one of the craziest stories I could tell you.
Well, you know what?
About
again,
that.
I invited my previous guest back. I'm sure all our listeners are intrigued, because if you're telling me you got out of this miserably torturous relationship, wound up in another relationship where there was infidelity, we're going to do a show on infidelity so people can hear, first
Absolutely.
Of all, how you get into it, how you get out of it. And,
yep.
and also, how, you know, we were talking earlier, how do you know a bad relationship and how do you know a good relationship? It sounds like
yeah.
you got out of this awful marriage. How did you get into a bad relationship?
Oh, yes, I can answer that question. So I am 50 years old, right, and I am just now starting to understand, to answer those questions. How do you know you're in something unhealthy or healthy? I'm
right.
just now figuring this out. I have a master's degree. I'm an intelligent person. But it's like, so, I was so naive about how people are. You know, I didn't know people
right.
just lied all the time. I didn't know that was a way of life. I am
right.
such an honest and naive and trusting person. I just assume mm-hmm. people are telling me the truth. You know,
mm-hmm.
so I just learned so hard about, you know, there's just a bunch of people out there that do not have high standards for themselves like I do.
Well, so, you know, it's interesting. I have a book called How Could You Do This to Me? Learning
mm-hmm.
to Trust After Betrayal. And I talk about trust factors. And one of the things that makes people trust is exactly what you just said. Well, I'm trustworthy, so you will
mm-hmm.
be too. And
I just assume people are like me.
Exactly. And because you're devoted to taking care and helping people and looking to give to them, you assume that people will do the same thing and have your best interest at heart.
Absolutely.
And yet there are a lot of people that are grandma, what big eyes you have, that are out there for themselves. They're
yep.
not interested in your needs. They're interested in getting you to meet their needs. And
yes.
if you don't know how to recognize it, you're going to get devoured.
It's a very hard awakening. That's how
well,
I learned the hard
well,
way.
Well, we want to hear more about that hard landing and the, you know, the waking up and the wake-up call that it gave you on the next podcast that we do. And I want to thank you for being here today, for being so honest and open and vulnerable about the journey you've been on to be the best version of yourself. And also, I think you said something so compelling for everybody out there. How smart you are, master's degrees, doctorate degrees, academics, being it is irrelevant when it comes to
yep.
emotional savvy, know-how, and coping. So,
yep.
you know, I think that also contributes to people staying in denial because you say, well, I'm so smart, I must know what's going on. But not necessarily. How smart you are doesn't have to do with your emotional smarts. In any event,
right.
Heidi, thank you so much. And listeners, you can learn more about Heidi and her full story at Heidi Shaner, HEIDISHANER.com, or on Instagram at Heidi Shaner, SHANER Wellness. Heidi, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. And when we come back, everybody, it will be time for Shrink Wrap. So stay with us.
Dr. Jean Greer is recognized as a leading national expert in sex, love, and relationships. She's the type of person that you want to know. Filled with wisdom, kindness, and empathy, she spends her life helping people. Whether through TV appearances, on a radio show, through her books or magazine features and columns, or in person. Dr. Jean Greer's main goal is to help you. Find out more about Dr. Jean Greer by visiting her website at drjeangreer.com. That's drjeangreer.com.
If you're looking for unique items at affordable prices, then you should try Dream Product. From apparel to beauty, from shoes to therapeutic relief products, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Dream Products, and maybe your dreams might just come into reality.
If there was a hotline to heaven, who would you call? In Dr. Jane Greer's book, The Afterlife Connection, you can learn to connect with a loved one who has passed, so you can say hello instead of goodbye. You'll get 7 tips for opening the channels of communication with your departed loved ones and recognize the signs your loved one sends your way. Learn how to include your departed loved one in your daily life, and you can even heal damaged relationships even after your loved one is gone. A special book by a therapist who cares, The Afterlife Connection by Dr. Jane Greer, gives you the tools for filling the gaps and creating a sense of closure. Get this amazing book today at Amazon.com or visit DrJaneGreer.com, www.DrJaneGreer.com. How could you do this to me? What about me? If your selfishness is ruining your relationship, or if you're trying to learn to trust after betrayal, then how could you do this to me and what about me are the titles of 2 separate books by Dr. Jane Greer that you should get to help improve your relationships. Imagine having a happy, loving, thriving relationship again. Get the help you need with How Could You Do This to Me or What About Me by Dr. Jane Greer at Amazon.com. Get your copy now at Amazon.com.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome to the Shrink Wrap segment of the Doctor on Call Hour, where it's all about what we can learn from the trials and triumphs of not only celebrity lives and relationships, but all relationships. You know, the celebrity stars shine so brightly, and we all look up to them, yet we're puzzled when they fall. So Shrink Wrap is here to shed light on all. And joining me today, as every show, is Jake Cruz. He has had an extensive experience as a broadcasting professional, and he's used his background and experience to help produce, coach, and further the positive vision of Healthy Life Radio and its many numerous shows. Hey, Jay, thank you for being here once more with Feeling.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's always a delight, and we are going to talk about one of the latest and unfortunate Hollywood scandals, infidelity. The husband of Natalie Portman, Benjamin Millepied, and his alleged cheating with a young 25-year-old French climate change activist. So this young lady is 2 decades his junior, and the reports say that Benjamin is doing everything he can do to save his marriage. What do you think? Should we expect Natalie to be able to trust him again? And also keeping in mind that just last year, they suffered a brief split, but then ostensibly they came back stronger than ever, but maybe that stronger than ever was not quite as strong as they thought, because right. Now there's this. What's your take?
Well, sometimes that stronger than ever, and I'm sure you're familiar with the technique or the term of love bombing. You know, he might have known he did something bad, may or may not have been caught, and decided, that wasn't so nice of me. Maybe I better be really nice to Natalie. in case, you know, my guilt is overwhelming, or maybe she'll find out. But I did see a photo of them that was dated from 2022, and the body language, Dr. Jane, it looked like they were, you know, could have been brother and sister. You couldn't have convinced me they were husband and wife. There was a space between them, and, you know, she was dressed up. It was probably an award or one of those red carpet type of things. It was on a stage, and, you know, it was a formal thing. But the body language, you know, it was like there was something obviously between them, and it was about a foot of space where they probably should have been closer. And that was just a photo I saw, and I'm like, okay. And then, I don't know, someone 20 years younger than you, I don't sign off on that one. That's just bad.
But so here's the thing. What you are saying is so important, because literally you are referring to the space between these two people.
Mm-hmm.
And what I say so often when I'm experiencing infidelity with the couples that I work with, you very often, you know, the person who your partner cheated with becomes the threat, the rival. How could she? How could he? And what, you know, while they certainly are a threat in the moment, the reality is they only were able to get into your relationship or your marriage because of the space between you and your partner. That literally you were seeing the space when there's that kind of emotional distance. So here it manifested as physical distance. But when there's emotional distance in space, that's when one person does become susceptible or vulnerable to a fling, cheating, an extramarital affair with somebody else who suddenly is meeting needs that are not getting met in the marriage for whatever the reason. You know, it makes you wonder, because she's so much younger, is it just a fling? You know, is he going through a midlife crisis? He's in his 40s and he's feeling that he's getting older and he's married and, you know, he just wanted to feel his youth again, and here's this young woman who's finding him attractive. Was it more about ego in the moment? And, you know, when we make mistakes, it's in the aftermath that we say, oh my God, I didn't realize I put everything that I value on the line. It's like it's a mistake. But you didn't realize, like, you could bankrupt yourself emotionally because of it. So, you know, the question becomes, is this a legitimate, loving relationship that he is having with this woman, regardless or despite her age? Or is it reflective that because she's so young, it's just sort of a passing plaything fling that he got caught up in the moment? And they, that does make a difference in the experience that I've had working with infidelity. It doesn't take away from the pain of the person who's been cheated on. There is no question about that. It could be, I've had people where it's their husband or wife just kissed somebody and there's been tremendous anguish. But there is a difference in the healing process and the damages, the damages that can occur if it's an ongoing, lasting love relationship, as opposed to a one or a two or three time fling. In terms of after getting over the betrayal and the hurt, what it means. I mean, it's a little bit easier for people to extract themselves when it's a, you know, I made a mistake, I shouldn't have slept with her or him, kind of a thing, as opposed to they're in love with somebody else.
Oh yeah, there's a world of difference. Obviously, you know, it's a breach of the relationship and the trust, but, you know, there's two different points. You know, is this an ongoing thing? Or are they like, you know, secretly, you know, has he met the kids? Or are they, you know, anything like that?
Right.
You know, where this is, you know, obviously this definitely seems like more, as you put it, could be a midlife crisis. A bit of the ego feels we're 45, we want to regain our youth. And, you know, he is a choreographer dancer, so that might be in the back of his mind, you know. And then we don't know what's going on, you know, between the marriage. Is he getting enough attention? Did he feel, you know, he wasn't getting enough attention and had to do this to, you know, bring that out. But if you're not getting enough attention, you should probably, you know, talk about it or mention it. As your first guest said, you know, communication definitely helps and being, you know, being clear. You know, but this is a common scenario with men and women that cheat, and going for the younger person, definitely it's probably 98% to 2% on men versus women doing this. You know, but there was a Jada Smith, and we're not going to get into that. But I mean, but you know, again, this is the typical midlife man who's like, oh, you know, I used to pull the young girls, and they used to come to me all the time, and you know, hey, you know, you're still really not that old, and you ended up with Natalie Portman, you know, who is a seems like a catch. I mean, she's very lovely, she's talented, an actress, and you know, there's a lot of good there. So, you know, Chris Rock one time said, you know, sometimes men are only as their options, and this was in a stand-up comedy, but he, you know, he also said, you know, if you get to that point, you got to reinvent the relationship. He used a different word, but that's the word we're using on this broadcast today. To, you know, you got to find a way to rekindle the fire, reinvent the relationship feel it's gone. And, you know, going out with the new one, you know, who, you know, obviously there might have been the physical attraction, and after that happened, you know, maybe there was nothing there, and he decided, oh, this is a big mistake. Or, you know, usually it's a big mistake once you've been caught. A lot of people pretend it didn't happen until they're caught, and then all of a sudden it's now it's a big mistake. It wasn't a big mistake the third time, second time, and I went over there, though.
Right. But, you know, two things I want to say. First of all, there's getting caught. Sometimes that's the unconscious at play, that they're just uncomfortable and the guilt is too much, so they inadvertently do get caught, you know, because it puts an end to it. Maybe they weren't able to end it, but getting caught inevitably is going to bring an end to it. And the other thing, just to qualify what I said earlier, there may be different elements in the cheating, but the bottom line and fundamental to all of it is that it's a broken trust and a betrayal. And whether it's a kiss or a two-night fling or, you know, a short-term relationship or a five-year love affair, the broken trust is what has to be repaired. Because when there is no trust in a relationship, there is no relationship. And the goal has to be, anybody out there who's dealing or healing with infidelity, has to be rebuilding, repairing the broken, damaged trust. And that means being open and accountable and sharing and letting your partner know where you're going and what you're doing and seeing your phone and seeing your computer and being exactly the opposite of what you were prior to being caught, which is hiding and silent and secret and keeping everything to yourself. So it's like it's like cold water in your face. You've got to rebuild the trust and you've got to be open so that you help your partner see that they can trust you going forward.
Yeah, if that's, and sometimes couples do want to work on it and get through it. You know, it doesn't always end in a divorce, but there's definitely a change and an adjustment to get to a place where the trust can be rebuilt, and that is extremely important in a relationship. Without that, as you said, there's no relationship, and we're coming up to the end of the show today, Dr. Jane. It's been a very good one, and listeners find it online on demand here on the Healthy Life homepage later.
Wonderful, and thank you, Jay, as always, for another insightful conversation of the trials and triumphs of celebrity relationships. Join me next month, everyone, for a replay of one of my favorite Doctor on Call episodes. Be sure to visit me online at drjanegreer.com, where you can find more information on reigniting date night with trailblazing love, and also learn more about my book, Am I Lying to Myself? How to Overcome Denial and See the Truth, which is available on amazon.com. And thanks for listening, everyone. Remember, you can always get what you want when you're in the know.
Thank you for joining Dr. Jane Greer for Doctor on Call. Listen to this episode again anytime on demand at healthylife.net. Keep up with Dr. Jane Greer's social media, blogs, magazine articles, books, and guest appearances at her website, drjanegreer.com. Dr. On Call with Dr. Jane Greer is produced and syndicated by healthylife.net. All positive, Web Talk Radio.